Welcome to The Voice of Retail. I'm Michael LeBlanc, your host. The Voice of Retail is produced in conjunction with Retail Council of Canada and is presented by Hale, a performance marketing partner trusted by brands like ASICS, Sage, and Orange Theory to scale with focus and impact. Jean-Pierre, welcome to the Voice of Retail podcast. I cannot believe I'm almost at 500 episodes and you have not been on my podcast. What have we been thinking? Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. And it's great to have an opportunity to share some of the insights with you and your audience.
Well, and what's brought us together, and we'll get to it in a minute, is I believe it's your third book, Think Blink. I've just been reading through it. It's a fantastic book. And so I really want to delve into it with everyone. But I don't know, maybe we should. I got some listeners outside of the country and maybe some newer folks who may not know who you are. I can't imagine there's too many of them, but they may not know maybe all of it. So why don't you take us through a little bit of your background and SLD and what makes your firm so successful in a crowded global marketplace for so many decades?
Well, we've been in business 35 years, which privately owned. So that's kind of an accomplishment on its own. So I've seen
it's a big accomplishment.
Yeah. I've seen the ups and downs in the marketplace numerous times. Déjà vu. We've always focused on the blink factor, creating emotional connections. I started the company 36 years ago. And in our first year, we were doing work for Pizza Hut US. And we were launching Pizza Hut Cafe. And that's where I coined the phrase the blink factor in 1993 and trademarked it in 96. And so what makes us successful is that we clearly understand the emotional connections that brands have with consumers and what are the triggers and levers to drive that connection. And, you know, it's interesting if you look at, you know, 37 years ago, 36 years ago, the average supermarket was offered a quarter the number of SKUs that they do now. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have online shopping and we didn't have mobile apps. And if you look at that change, and we're being inundated with, you know, 40,000 messages a day, you know, having clarity and connecting with consumers is a bigger challenge. And that's where the blink factor plays a, you know, pivotal, critical role. I have an office in Shanghai and an office in Oman and head office in Toronto. And people ask me, why did we open in China? And I said, I wanted to see where the future was. And I haven't been disappointed.
Yeah, we were talking off mic about different places in the world where there's retail innovation, and you've long held that if you really want to go see real echo or real envelope, pushing the envelope innovation, it's probably UAE or China. And you know, China's interesting because it's so, on the one hand, it's so digital, right? 55-60% of purchases are digital, but at the same time, they do seem to be innovating retail concepts at some disruptive pace, yeah?
Yeah, they do. Well, they're willing to invest in that disruption and willing to experiment. They're not shy at, you know, I remember a project we did for a large institution. They wanted to test a staffless branch where everything was automated, including robots. We had to introduce robots, and we did the test. We opened the branch, and within 3 months, we realized, you know, it was a really bad idea. And so, you know what? They just closed the branch. They learned the key insights that, you know, humans matter in banking, and they applied that to, you know, rollouts of new concepts that we got involved in. And so the ability of taking risk and being willing to make mistakes is the true indication of innovation.
Yeah. Do you think that's a cultural or their style of capitalism, their style of, you know, they've got scale on their side, of course, right? Take a little risk and you got so many customers, you can move on and continue to grow. Is it a mix of those three? You got a huge market, you've got a culture of risk taking, and you've got just a different style of capitalism. Is that the secret recipe or the recipe, do you think?
Yeah. And I would say one other one is that the competitive environment in China is, you know, off the Richter scale. You know, there are so many different offerings from food service to retail to supermarket, you know, that if they don't stand out, they're not going to survive.
Right.
And so it's just a very different playing field.
All right. Well, let's get to this book. Very exciting. Think Blink Manifesto. It's your third book, I think. Creating Deep, Lasting Emotional Brand Connections in the Blink of an Eye. So I have to first ask you, well, you know, as you wrote it and as you, you know, practice your craft, who are you writing it for? Who do you think should read it, or who do you hope reads this book?
Well, we have different call them target group personas, and one of them is transformation aspirers, and that's what the book was written for. It's for organizations that are going through a major change. They're looking at transforming their entire value proposition, from the customer experience to the offerings to the way they communicate and the value they bring. And the book was written for them. And the key insight that we want to drive, or the key message we want to drive, is incrementalist mentality is dead. We can't grow by incremental thinking. And that if you don't shift from focusing on functional benefits to emotional benefits, you're going to be left behind. And that's the two key points we want to communicate. That's really what drove me to write this book, other than creating a legacy of a lot of the principles that we created 36 years ago that we apply to our business day to day.
Yeah, knowing a bit about your firm and knowing you, I definitely see that reflected in the work. And would you describe that as the animating principle, that this is really the, you know, you would call them manifesto, and we're going to get to them, but the animating principle of the book is this, you know, the foundation of what you've built the firm on, really?
Absolutely. And you know, the beauty is that, you know, a lot of these seven tenets, they've been applied to numerous assignments. And so we have kind of, I'll call it, acid tested the Think Blink tenets with real projects, with real results, with real people, with real consumers. This is not hypothetical or academic. This is truly based on real life experiences, you know, spanned over 36 years.
Now, I don't want to go through, you know, page by page, because I will let people get this book, make sure they get the book. But take us through just what the seven tenets are, and then we're going to move on and just talk about, you know, different factors on them. But just chalk the field for us and give us your framework.
Yeah, Michael, the seven tenets, think of them as a ladder. They one builds on top of the other. So these are not, they could be exclusive tenets, you know, where you focus on one, but the reality, they should create a build. So the first one is about the heart wins every time. It's about moving from functional benefits to understanding what are the emotional equities your brand owns. What are the emotional equities of the category, and what are the gaps between where you are and where you need to be? Tenet number two is all about design. Good design is strategy. It's really understanding that design creates a memory imprint. You know, we make decisions based on memories we've had with products, and good design is the key driver of those memories. So really create those memorable experiences through design. Tenet number three is simplicity speaks louder. It's eliminating the clutter in the marketplace. It's forcing us to tell a story that is singular. And this is the biggest challenge. You know, marketing is like buckshot. You know, we hope that some of the messages reach our audience. And this discipline is really singular. What is the one message you want to own? Tenet number four is consumer context is critical. And it's really about understanding the personas. Who are you going after? What's beyond psychographic and demographic? What is their lifestyle needs, their emotional needs? You know, what are their behaviors? These are so important. Tenet number five is about belonging. My first book was called Belonging Experiences. It was written in 2010. So that's quite 15 years ago. And now belonging is one of the key buzzwords. And we're going to talk about that later the marketplace, you know, the sense of belonging, a sense of community. And that is so important, because we know, based on numerous studies we've done, that a community commitment by brands drives brand and customer loyalty. Tenet number six is really measuring what matters. You know, most organizations measure, you know, if you're a retailer, you're measuring traffic, basket size, frequency of visit, day part strategy. They're all functional factors. And yes, they're important. But you should also be measuring sentiment. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you making your customers feel? Mm. What are those sentiments beyond NPS scores? And again, what we learned through research is that a lot of the functional benefits reduce attrition, but they don't drive growth. So they'll reduce that customer leaving that brand, that retailer, but they're not going to get the consumer to visit more often. What we found out was creating memorable, shareable experiences is a key driver of growth. Mm. You know, an NPS score, which is like, you know, would you recommend this to your friend, is really not a true indication of growth. What's a true indication of growth is, will they become brand ambassadors for your organization?
And on that note, you know, two of those things, Seth Godin has been a frequent guest on my U.S. podcast with Steve Dennis, Remarkable Retail, and he talks about these two things. He articulates them somewhat different, but he talks about, you know, finding your tribe, the people that, you know, they like Birkin bags and you like Birkin bags and you want to feel part of that tribe. And then the second thing is, you architect it in one way. He talks about remarkability, the fact that people will actually remark on your brand. And if they're not talking about your brand, then you're not really getting anywhere. And I think that's what you're getting at, particularly with number six.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then the last tenet is really about future-proofing your brand. You know, we're witnessing a lot of disruption. Our firm predicted the pandemic 18 months before it happened. We do a trends analysis every year that we share. And it's really establishing different scenarios for organizations so that they can mitigate any disruption. And so those are the seven tenets in the book.
Now, I want to ask you, you just mentioned disruption. So as I was reflecting on what you were saying, I think of two things that really disrupted consumer behavior, because you and I know how hard it is to get people to change a habit. And I think of two things most recently that did that. The COVID era, right? People started shopping in places they hadn't shopped before. I've equated that to kind of like a broomstick and a bicycle wheel, right? Suddenly you can't shop where you were. They don't have the product. They're closed. You discover new retailers. And then the second thing, I want to get your input on this. You know, this whole dust up we're having with the Americans, and people are saying, you know, do you think it's going to last? You know, you can't get California wine on the shelves. And I said, well, it's not going to last, but does it have the power to change behavior? And I always say, listen, I like a great Kentucky bourbon, but I haven't had it in a while. I don't miss it. I've tried a Canadian whiskey that I now love. I'm not sure I would have tried that Canadian whiskey without these kind of disruptions. Do you see it in that kind of same context? Like, I'm trying to figure out the lasting impact of both of those pretty significant disruptions. What do you think of that? What do you make of that?
Yeah, disruptions do force a behavioral change. We are creatures of habit. And you've got good disruptions and bad disruptions. COVID was a bad disruption to a certain degree. It forced us to, you know, you look at the elderly. They were never used online and they became very active to do all their banking online. Yeah. And so there's always a positive side to disruption. The tariff issues, which are not just with U.S., I think what we're seeing here is a reawakening of a bigger trend, which is this whole thing of protectionism and nationalism happening from country to country. You know, that is reigniting, country pride. And all we had to do is look at the Blue Jays game last night to realize how much country pride we have. And it's disrupting, this disruption is kind of reawakening things that we've been putting aside and nudging us towards new behaviors. And it's all positive. You know, so all of these things are positive. You know, in a way, I'm happy that this is, I feel really bad for people being impacted negatively on these tariff fights. But it's forced us to rethink our value, what we provide value to the world, moving from primary resources to value added. An example, right? Mm. So we're one of the largest, supplier of timber. We sell timber to other countries. They buy our timber. They make furniture. Beautiful furniture. They come back and sell it back to us for 1,000 times the price of the original timber. You know, tell me, that's just flawed approach.
It's such a great thing because you're such a, I don't know, boy, it's for some strange reason taken on a a pejorative name, but you're very much a globalist. You travel around the world. You see that you have got a context that's much broader than our own borders. I mean, you know, as you say, it's not a good time to be a canola farmer, given what China is doing, or a soy farmer in America. But they are forcing us into decisions that maybe we should have been making earlier. How do you equate that to consumers? Do you think the consumer impact is reacting to these? You know, now you got a Canada Post strike. You don't see get your flyers. Maybe you were a fan of flyers, right? Print flyers. We were talking about that. Do you see a consumer that is more adaptable or more resilient? Maybe in part because of the COVID era.
Yes, I truly believe that Canadians by nature are more resilient. It's part of our DNA, and so, which is great, the ability of being a little bit more agile and nimble and being able to pivot. And so, yes, I think that all of these dynamics, and there's going to be more dynamics happening in the marketplace. You know, there's a lot of geopolitical wars going on. You know, those things are going to spill over sooner or later. And so
I haven't talked about the environment yet, let alone.
No, you know, and the environment, I mean, we just look at the hurricanes. That's just only going to get amplified. And so being able to, or the fires on the East Coast and in out West, I think those are all factors that are disrupting the way we look at the world and nudging us in the right directions. I always look at the positive, optimistic side to any change. And I view all these changes, as much as they're disruptive and hurtful in a lot of cases, they're also forcing us to move, to do things that we were putting off.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, let's talk about the blink factor. Could you explain to the listeners what the blink factor is? It's pivotal to the book, but let's not skip past it. What is it in, and how does it work?
Well, it's reflective of how we make decisions. You know, we have a functional side of the brain and an emotional side of the brain. And when you start making decisions and analyzing things and comparing things, you're asking your brain to do a lot of work. And your brain doesn't like to do a lot of work. It uses a lot of energy, a lot of calories. So it's always looking for heuristic emotional shortcuts. Memories are one of them. Brand equity and brand identity are another. And so the brain is looking for, you want to buy this product because it made you feel this way in your subconscious. And it connects with these visuals. And so when you're in a store, you're looking at your Tide, you're looking for detergent, and you spot Tide because it brought back memories of, you know, making sure your clothes were clean for your children. You know, brought back a lot of positive imagery and feelings, and that's how the blink factor works. And that relationship that happens in a thousandth of a second. It used to be a split second, and they've done recent research to say, no, it's actually even faster than that. And so when you think of a sea of choice and you want to be the market leader, you want to make sure that you have emotional memories and key visuals, color and shape that connect instantly with your consumers, that's recognizable. And that's where a lot of brands get into trouble because they change pretty well everything on the package. And the consumer goes to the store looking for their brand. I remember the Tropicana orange juice.
Classic.
Orange and the straw out in the U.S. Yeah. We fought it here in Canada, won our battle, but they destroyed the brand in the U.S. And they lost the consumer because they changed the visual icon of the brand, which was the orange and the straw. And so that's the blink factor. It's that emotional connection that happens in a thousandth of a second.
We'll be right back after these messages. The Voice of Retail is brought to you by Hale, the partner behind some of the fastest growing DTC and retail brands in North America. Hale is recognized for senior teams who cut out the noise and keep their focus on what matters most, growth. Their approach is based on outcomes, not hours. They are selective with who they partner with, bringing speed, accountability, and a clear strategy to every engagement. Paid media, content, performance, all of it connects directly to real results. That's why brands like ASICS, Sage, and Orange Theory choose Hale to help them scale. Learn more at wearehale.com. Now, how do you reconcile that? Maybe reconcile is not the right word, because, you know, no one would take your work as nothing but both, you know, the analytics behind your work, the measurement, the regard and recognition tests, and all these things. But, you know, this, how do you put those two things together, this blink, this instant moment versus, you know, hard measurement and metrics that kind of can track and predict brand success?
Well, the good news is that they're converging. I mean, you know, there wasn't a lot of, let me dial back. I would say organizations are realizing the importance of emotional connections in the blink of the eye. And I can say that with confidence when I do a web search on AI tools that evaluate, you know, emotional connections in the blink of the eye. And you'll have 30 or 40 companies, AI-enabled, IO-enabled software programs that are used online or on headsets that evaluate how quickly you connect with brands and where you look and how do those brands make you feel. So we're seeing the convergence, whereas before executives would say, well, how do we measure, JP, how do we measure these emotional connections?
Yeah.
We had hot
specs. Disparate things, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Hot specs pioneered it 25 years ago. We were one of their first clients, and they did a great job of mapping out the emotions and obviously benchmarking that. But now there's a lot of, you know, AI-enabled tools that allow you to do those insights. And so it's more accessible, it's more measurable. And once you start doing the correlation between those measurements and the impact it has on sales, you've got validation points. And we're seeing more and more of that.
So we were 19 minutes into our conversation before the word AI came up, which is something of a record these days. How do you see AI in your business? Disruptive? You know, I worry sometimes that it just gets people to the wrong decision faster, but, you know, it has the power to do a lot of things. I was doing some work on ChatGPT, trying to get it to do some analysis, and it gave me a praying emoji and saying, listen, I have to be straight with you. I can't do what you asked me. My God, who am I talking to? Hal here. But what's your perspective on AI? Is it is it as disruptive, as powerful as people think it is? Where does it fit in your business? Just talk about it for a minute or two.
Yeah, Michael, in 2017, we were doing a trends analysis, and I said, you know, AI is going to move from universities and labs into the consumer realm. I better learn about that. So I went to MIT and I got a degree in AI, application of AI to business. And so and in those days, you needed to know programming in order to use OpenAI. It wasn't as friendly and easy to use as it is today. It's query-based. So I say that really to reinforce that we believe AI is a really important factor in how business will remain competitive and sustainable, because we're all being forced to find efficiencies on those, you know, low value tasks or to gain greater insight. And this week, we're going to be launching a new tool available to you and to retailers called AI Think Blink. It does a deep, deep analysis leveraging the seven tenets. And we, you know, over the years have done numerous industry studies, and we've inputted all of that data. There's like 30 studies, and we're doing two more studies into the model. And it will give you a very accurate, if you go to my LinkedIn profile and look at what the analysis we did in the Canadian banking industry, it will give you a very accurate and deep analysis, because it goes into not only our data fields, the research sources we have, but it also goes in and looks at the social media platforms, the annual reports. It does a huge, you know, scraping of all the data that's available to give the analysis against the seven tenets and some recommendations.
Fantastic.
And I think that, and an interesting point is we've asked the system to do a correlation between the overall tenant score of brands versus their NPS versus their sales. And what's interesting is brands that have high NPS scores, high sales, have extremely high think blink tenet scores. Mm. And so there's a correlation of emotional connections to driving growth.
Well, fantastic. And look forward to that. Absolutely. So, all right. So to wrap up our discussion, I thought picking up on your theme, the think blink theme, let's do a lightning round. So first, your first response, 5 seconds for a bunch of things, and thought we had some fun and get some quick results, get some quick responses. All right. So first blink, one brand you instantly admired the moment you saw it.
Courvoisier XO, incredible bottle shape, textures, graphics, packaging.
Gut versus data, which one wins?
Gut. Our biases always cloud our decisions.
Most overrated buzzword in branding or innovation today?
Omnichannel.
Great one. Last big decision you made purely on instinct?
Buying my house.
Visual power. What color that instantly evokes trust for you?
Blue. That's why RBC is blue.
Brand therapy. If a struggling brand could spend 1 hour in a blink boot camp, which you offer, what's the first exercise you'd have them do?
Define your brand's emotional equity.
AI intuition. Can your AI blink?
Yes. It's doing it now.
All right. Which book, besides your own, which is a fantastic book, has shaped how you think about intuition, branding, and the way you see the universe?
Blue Ocean Strategy. That was a groundbreaking book that really changed the way we think of business models.
Which generation, boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, best understand this mindset? Or is that a false framework question? Because I sometimes feel we get confused with lack of attention span versus blink.
There's no generation. The emotional connection connects with all age groups. There are different levers and importance factors that influence one age group versus the other, or one generation versus the other, but they all play into its core of the human DNA. It is not something that is added. It's at the core of who we are as humans.
Okay. Last one. How can listeners start thinking more blink today?
They can go to our website and they can download the first chapter of the book, which gives them a very high level view of the different tenets and why they're important.
So once again, the book is Think Blink, Creating Deep Lasting Emotional Brand Connections in the Blink of an Eye. Jean-Pierre, how do people get in touch with you if you want to reach out? Are you LinkedIn? And then where do they go to find the book?
They just go to www.sld.com. Mm-hmm. That's samlovedog.com. And they can have my contact information there. And they can also download the first chapter of the book.
Fantastic. Well, you're such a treat. As I said right off the top, I can't believe I almost got to 500 episodes without having you on. You provide so much insight, and you've been such a great leader in many industries, including retail. So thanks for making some time to join me on the Voice Retail podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be on your podcast. I've been listening to your podcast for the last 2 years, and great content. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Voice of Retail. If you haven't already, follow on your favorite podcast platform so new episodes will land automatically each week. And be sure and check out my other retail industry media properties, the Remarkable Retail Podcast with Steve Dennis and the Global E-Commerce Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Blanc, Senior Retail Advisor, Keynote Speaker. If you want more content or chat, follow me on LinkedIn. Safe travels, everyone.